time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And as usual, let me just mention that our show is brought to you by Hydrame Skin Nutrition. You can find them at www.hydrame.com. That's HYDRAME.com. And if you haven't heard this before, they make wonderful, completely natural, organic skin nutrition. So you get to wear your food and eat it through your skin. It's like being a kid again. It doesn't leave a greasy rip, too. It's really cool stuff. Just soaks right in. So if you haven't tried that, you might want to pick some of that up. And just know that, you know, it doesn't leave any kind of residue, so it's kind of nice. It has a little bit of an almond smell when you first start. And then as soon as it dries, then there's no scent. So it's pretty cool stuff. Okay, our guest tonight is a new friend of mine, Tom Rutland, who is the inventor and manufacturer of ExoStrider. And I had the extreme pleasure of meeting Tom at my writer's retreat this last week. And he has some truly remarkable things that I think you're going to be really excited to learn about. I know I was. And so I'm going to start with, first of all, welcoming Tom to the show. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Thanks, Dr. Val. I'm doing great. Thank you. It's a little late for me here in Wisconsin, but I'm enjoying this anyway.
Yeah, it is late, especially after that class, huh? I try to explain that to people. I tell them it's the extreme sport of writing. Because
right.
You sit down and do nothing but write for 8 hours a day. And I mean, it's pretty intense, and the first time that I did that, I just sat on the couch, ate, slept, and mumbled for about 3 days. So
I can relate to that.
Yeah. So thank you for coming on with such short notice and presenting what you've got for people. Would you start off by giving a little bio about yourself? Where'd you come from? You know, how did you manage to figure this stuff out?
Well, living in Wisconsin, not everybody skis, but skiing, cross-country skiing, or as the rest of the world calls it, Nordic skiing, got pretty popular in the 70s, and so did running. And I sort of got on board the running boom and the cross-country ski boom in the late 70s and became a competitive skier and runner. And sort of an addicted, no pain, no gain trainer. And in 1985, the spring of 1985, I was just coming off a season of ski racing and headed into a season of running road races and training for a big race that I'd done a number of years, and I got a nagging injury that at first didn't pay much attention to, but as the weeks went on, it shouted louder and louder until I had to pay attention to it. That's one of the problems with being an addicted runner. You tend to ignore little things that are going on with your body, and sometimes the runner's high helps you do that. But eventually it got so painful that I couldn't run, and it was about 2 miles from home when it happened. Started out the workout, and I couldn't go any further. Mm-hmm. And I walked home, limped a bit home, and like all addicted runners of the day, I was desperately seeking a way to keep racking up the miles. And I recalled that prior to ski season each year, I used my poles to run and bound and kind of simulate skiing as a training mechanism. So I went down and got my cross-country ski poles out, and I went back out to see if I could run with them, and I could. And I thought, boy, I've got this one figured out. I'll just use the poles until I can rehab from this injury. It'll be my bridge back to health for running. And turned out that it didn't exactly go according to that plan, because when I started using the poles, running with them initially, I realized that it was such a far superior exercise to ordinary running, because basically when you use the poles, what you're doing is applying some force, and I was doing it out of necessity initially to take that stress off my injury. And then, so I was running at the time about an hour and 20 to an hour and 30 minutes a day, and with the poles, in about 40 or 50 minutes, I had had a full workout. Basically, more than half your muscle mass is in your upper body, and when you really start to call on that muscle mass to go to work and help propel your body, it changes it, and it's a much more efficient way of exercise. And I never would have thought I'd do anything but run with the poles, except my wife and I had run in the past, but she quit running because of some real problems with her knees. So one day I said, you've got to try this, and I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just walk with you with the poles. And at the time, that was a real condescension for me to make that offer. But as I started walking with the poles, and it didn't seem quite vigorous enough, I just started applying more force to the poles, and I found that it was actually a satisfying workout. And we started walking with the poles frequently, and before I knew it, I was pretty much hooked on it. What I thought would just be a means of getting me back to health for running sort of grabbed me and wouldn't let go. And one of the things that happened is, as a no-pain, no-gain exerciser, when I started walking with poles, I said, you know, this feels so darn good, but I'm not really getting up into target heart rate, and my respiration isn't very deep, and I was only sweating enough to cool my body, which now when I look at it, makes perfect sense. That's what you're intended to do. But then it seemed like I just wasn't doing enough. But I like to say, before I discovered this exercise, my mind was in charge of my exercise, and it, in effect, rode my body like a jockey with a big whip, always pushing me to go harder and harder. And when I started doing this exercise, my body started speaking louder than my mind and saying, don't pay any attention to all that conventional wisdom. What you're doing is a good thing, and you should stick with it. And that was nearly 25 years ago.
That's a long time. You've
yeah,
been at
well,
this a while.
I have, yeah. Well, I mean, it really did grab me and just wouldn't let go. And I started thinking about how many other people could benefit from the exercise, because not everybody can run, but everybody can walk. And I knew right away that anybody who walked, by beginning to use their core and their upper body muscles at the same time, could get all these additional benefits. And it's really turned out to be true. I mean, no matter what your age, there are only two sort of tests for whether or not you can do this exercise successfully. One is, can you walk, and one is, can you give somebody a hug, because that requires two arms extended. Mm-hmm. And basically now, after a few years, I started thinking more and more about that. I was working in a corporate job. I thought about starting a business venture to try to promote walking with poles and selling poles. And I didn't have enough courage to really to say goodbye to my company car and my good insurance policy and my steady wages. But I was a development director for a restaurant chain. I started when they had 17 restaurants, and the day before I was downsized out of my job, we had 150 restaurants. And when I lost the job and we closed 50 restaurants one day, I went to my wife and I said, Wendy, you know, I've been thinking about promoting this exercise form, and at this point, I haven't got a lot of other options staring me in the face. How about if I try this, and then if in a couple years I'm not really making a go out of it, I'll get a regular job. But I thought I'd try and see what kind of reception I got. So in 1988, I went into the business. I created the word exerstriding. I thought pole walking was a little lacking in interest. So basically what I had determined is that you were exercising virtually all the muscles in your body at the same time you were striding. So I called it exerstriding and started Exerstrider products. And started promoting the exercise. And to be honest, the people who came to me first and were most open to the product were people who had some challenges in their life, people who had arthritic knees or hips, who were looking for some way to lessen the impact force on their hips and their knees, and they found that the poles did that. People who were battling obesity and found that it was difficult to walk for any length of time, or they were walking and they weren't getting results. When they virtually doubled the amount of muscle mass that was being used to exercise, they started seeing faster, motivating results. People with diabetes, looking for ways to manage their insulin levels. And so at first it was mostly people, frankly, who really were desperate for some kind of a solution. And they found me, and the net effect of that was after 2 years, I hadn't really made good on my promise to make it into a big business by any means. And so I went to my wife and I said, I guess it's time for me to start looking for a regular job. But because the product and the simple exercise had really impacted so many lives by that time, my wife really didn't miss a beat. She just said, what are you going to do that's going to change people's lives in the way that you're changing them now? She's, every time I've even thought about changing course on this over the last 20 years, she's said the same thing. So
that's,
I've now been doing the business for 20 years and changing lives. And really the reason that I was at the writer's workshop is it's changed my life probably as much as anybody's life, because when I started exercising with the poles, I thought, you know, this is just isn't going to cut it. And 25 years later, I'm 62 years old. I'm certainly not in the kind of shape for racing on the roads or ski racing that I was 25 years ago, but I'm way ahead of most of my friends who continued on the course of running and competitive sports, because what I've basically just done is use my body in a really effective way. When you contract all the muscles in the body, you're not only supplying oxygen throughout your body, you're also driving your lymph system function, really improving the lymph system function. Avoiding stress is definitely something that is in your best interest for health. High-intensity exercise tends to lower your immune system function.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
that's one thing that I caution my patients with, because I have a lot of type A patients that come in who are not supposed to do anything strenuous. Those are the type of people that do best with yoga and walking and meditation. And I find that most of the ones that come to me really ill are ones who try to do a type O lifestyle, which is basically balls to the walls, you know, competitive, and, you know, they try to do marathon running and all this other stuff, and they destroy themselves. Their immune systems can't take it. And I know
not
that the research,
the
research has shown that if you hit 40 minutes of continuous strenuous exercise, you have just impacted your immune system negatively.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of shocking to a lot of people. To the exercise addicts, they don't want to hear that. But that's what the
right.
scientific studies have shown.
Yeah, and my own experience bears that out. When I was competitively running and skiing, I had almost on an annual basis, somewhere between Thanksgiving and Christmas, I would get a respiratory ailment, a severe respiratory ailment. And over the years that I got that, I had sought out some help from a Chinese medicine expert here in town and gotten a great mixture of natural things that I made a tea out of, and that really helped me get over it. But I still, I got it every year, and when I stopped doing the competitive training, the annual respiratory illness didn't happen. So I've definitely experienced that on my own.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the most important things, the real personal experience, because once you have that, you get it. You know,
mm-hmm.
We can talk till we're blue in the face, but until people really have an experience that kind of tracks them back to what we're saying, they don't really get it. You know, but then once they have it, they go, oh, wait, I remember they were talking about that on the radio on such and such a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, oh, yeah, they were right. Too bad I didn't listen.
Yeah. Well, and the truth is, if there is an addicted runner or two listening tonight, they're probably not gonna be convinced by our discussion. But what the people that I have been most interested in talking to are people over the years who either don't exercise at all, or people who have been in walking programs or other lower intensity programs and haven't really been successful and happy about the results that they get. We have a culture right now where the word exercise has so many negative connotations, and I think that is because since Dr. Kenneth Cooper wrote the book Aerobics 40 years ago and started the running boom, and the whole idea of no pain, no gain became the dominant kind of paradigm of fitness, two-thirds of the population has basically been turned exercise phobic, or they just say they don't like exercise and don't want anything to do with it. And the great thing about this sort of exercise is if you can walk and you enjoy walking, you can turn it into a much more effective form of exercise that's more motivating and definitely it's not about no pain, no gain. Somewhere along the line the other kind of axiom was use it or lose it, and that one's kind of gotten buried below the no pain, no gain. But really, in terms of maintaining your health and thriving and maintaining a high level of function, it's use it or lose it. And fitness doesn't really happen just in the muscles and the heart. It happens at every cell in our body. You know, we've got 50 to 100 trillion cells in our body, and every one of them depend on nutrients and oxygen to be supplied to function at a high level. Skin cells or bone cells or organ cells. And when people start to think about exercise as being only about making your heart beat hard and supplying muscles that with the oxygen and then doing weight training to strengthen the muscles, that's the kind of thinking that an athlete needs to follow. But in terms of the vast majority of people who just want to look, feel, and function better, what I promise people is you can have a high level of fitness and a high level of function without ever having to sweat profusely, pant breathlessly, or endure sore, aching, or injured muscles. And that's pretty much what I've been preaching now for 20 years, and I've had a great deal of success with all kinds of people.
Well, and I've got to say, too, as a former pretty athletic person, you know, I did running for a long time. I used mm-hmm. to run 3 miles a day and you know, played tennis for several hours and, you know, lifted weights for at least an hour and a half, and, you know, between the free weights and the machine weights, you know, and just, I mean, I had about a 6.5-hour a day exercise program. And it took me about 6 months of running, of pure torture, to get to the point where I started to get the runner's high. So when we're talking about somebody being an addictive runner, let me just explain to people, that means that your body is in so much pain that it's producing endorphins. Endorphins are your body's chemical equivalent of morphine.
Endogenous morphine, yep.
Yeah, it's endogenous morphine. What it's doing is it's going into the morphine receptors in your brain, and it makes you feel really good. So you truly are addicted. But it comes about because your body hurts so much that it says, wow, I've got to do something that's going to help me to feel better. And like I said, I mean, I pounded my joints and everything else for, you know, 3 miles a day for 6 months every single day. And, you know, and this is on top of playing tennis and weightlifting and everything else. And it took me 6 months to get the runner's high. And at that point, it was like, woohoo, you know, I was having a good time. I was running backwards. I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And I kept pushing myself and just driving that body. And when I stopped, it was so amazing how quickly all that went away. And same thing, you know, I used to do karate. And I'd sit there and I would spar with the guys for like 8 hours a day. We would just play. We did this real intense calisthenics program. And then we did, you know, sparring. And I sparred with the men because women were too easy to just pick up and throw across the room. But, you know, with the men, I really had to work out. And, you know, it went away very, very quickly. Your physical fitness on that kind of stuff goes away within the space of a couple of weeks.
And so I think even more so when you're trained like an athlete. I mean, your body does accustom itself to what you're doing, and when you stop doing it, you go into even steeper declines. I've been exercising this way now for almost 25 years, never in target heart rate, but always getting my heart rate up in a healthy way. When I was a runner and a cross-country skier, I used to try to motivate myself to do weight training, and I never was motivated enough to do it. I like to move my body, but I don't like to move my body while just sitting on a bench or working on a machine. And the great thing about this is the way that it uses your entire body. Now, I did a little demonstration with you, and I don't know if we can have people who are listening right now try to do this. If you're sitting at a table or a computer, most people don't understand how walking with poles can activate their entire body and have these kinds of results. But if you're sitting at a table or sitting in front of your computer, if you extend both arms out as if reaching out for a handshake, and then make a fist and put the fist down on the tabletop or the computer desktop, and alternately push with one and then the other into the surface of the table or desk, what you're going to feel is how that extended arm acts as a lever to activate the muscles in your trunk, in your triceps, your pectorals, your abdominals, your spinal erectors, lats. Basically, all the major muscles of the upper body get activated. And if you're sitting at a desk or a table, and you've done that 10 or 20 times, you get a feel for how those muscles activate. Now, when you're walking with poles, you're pushing down with each stride in the same manner and activating those same muscles. So that means if you walk a mile, the average person takes somewhere between 18 and 2,200 steps per mile. So you're talking an average of about 2,000 of those contractions per mile. And that's a demonstration that I always do when I do my presentations and lectures, because we can talk a lot about the theory behind it, but people who have no knowledge of physiology, when they do that exercise, basically their eyes light up, and if it's somebody who doesn't exercise very much, they rediscover a lot of muscle activity that they haven't felt in a long time. And it's pretty easy once you do that little exercise to kind of extrapolate and say, well, it's just walking and that's all there is to it, and that's pretty much all there is to it.
Yeah, I have to say though, you know, when I tried the walking, it was so funny. I didn't even realize I was swinging my the same side arm and leg together. And,
yeah, well,
you know, I was totally unconscious of that, even though I know that that's not the right way to do it.
Right. Well, when you walk, your arms and legs swing in a contralateral manner. When the left arm goes forward, when the right leg goes forward, and we do that naturally. In fact, we start doing that pattern of movement when we crawl, and it's wired into our DNA. But when people pick up the poles and start to think that they need to figure out what's going on with everything now, it sort of short-circuits all that natural motion. So when I teach people, all I have to do is get them out of their head and back in their body and teach them a little bit about technique. Basically, you extend your arm out like you're reaching out for a handshake, and then you push down on the pole, and it moves from the shoulder, rotates from the shoulder joint, and stays in a fixed extended arm that just drops down, pushing down, and then returns up. So I call it the handshake and the pump handle technique. And it's the great thing about it is it's just so simple.
Yeah, it is really simple. And the thing that impressed me, Tom, is that just walking across the room with those poles and basically, you know, you're just dragging them until you get into, you know, walking a few steps.
Right.
So, and they're so lightweight that you don't notice it. But the thing that I noticed right away is that just with walking maybe about 20 steps, I started to feel the heat in my body. And it wasn't like the kind of heat where you're going to sweat.
Right.
It was more like it was the heat of the actual energy of my body flowing the way it was supposed to.
Right.
And the oxygen getting in there. And you know, I was feeling enlivened just by taking those few steps. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because I'd really like to have people understand that even if they're in really horrendous physical shape, they could still do this. And even if they walked 20 steps with these things, maybe the next day they could do 30, and the next day they could do 40, and pretty soon they'd be walking around the block and you know, taking a little hike or whatever. And that's what I want to encourage people to think about, not
sure.
to think about this so much as an athletic thing, but rather, you know, to get yourself back into shape. And then, of course, athletes can use these too. But my concern is so much with the people who are sedentary, who have tried everything, you know, nothing's worked. They've got injuries from car accidents or falls or, excuse me, or diseases or, you know, whatever. But they need some help now. And they
right.
need to do something that's not going to be so expensive that they can't do it, and something they can do on their own, and they can just get a little bit more every day.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most extreme example that I've had of somebody who even found it difficult to walk and needed to exercise was a woman up here in Wisconsin who she was in her early 40s, and she weighed around 450 pounds. They didn't have a scale in her city that would weigh over 300 pounds, but she, the doctor estimated she was around 450 to 460 pounds, and he basically told her that she wouldn't make it to her 50th birthday unless she started exercising and lost a significant amount of weight.
Wow.
And he offered two suggestions to her. One was to get a gastric bypass, and the other one was to start an exercise program, and he said the only one that he would recommend for her was walking.
Mm-hmm.
So she knew she didn't want to get a gastric bypass. She was informed enough about the risks and what you have to do afterwards. And for anybody who's thinking about a gastric bypass, be sure that you ask the question, what kind of lifestyle changes am I going to have to make afterwards if I want this to succeed in the long run? Because once you know the answer to that question, you'll discover that basically if you make the lifestyle changes you're going to have to make afterwards, you could probably succeed in large part without the surgery and all the risks that come along with it. But Anne-Marie knew about the risks, so she tried to start a walking program, at 450 pounds, she was a good 250 pounds over any kind of healthy weight. Mm-hmm. And most people, when I talk about this, they don't really have a way of understanding what it's like to be 250 pounds over healthy weight. So I usually ask people how many of them have ever lifted a 50-pound bag of dog food. And a lot of people are familiar with what that's like. And I point out that she was basically walking around with the equivalent of five 50-pound bags of dog food attached to her, the weight of that attached to her torso. And you can imagine what that would be like if, I mean, I can barely imagine what it would be like for me to strap five 50-pound bags of dog food to my body and try to walk.
Yeah, most people couldn't do it.
Yeah, so it was very painful. And she was panting after 15 minutes, she said. Fortunately, she ran into somebody in her town who was using a pair of my poles. And they said, you know, it takes some of the stress off your lower legs or lower limbs. And it uses your upper body. So she got a pair. And I didn't hear from her. She just ordered online. And I didn't hear from her until about 18 months later. But what she'd done is she'd started using the poles, and everybody, whether they're overweight or not overweight, has a lot of muscle mass in their upper body that just is latent strength when you walk. But when you start to walk with poles, it becomes really important in terms of increasing the metabolics of the activity. And she could not only walk with very little pain for 15 minutes right away, but she progressed in just a few weeks to walking nearly an hour. And in my manual that comes with it, I advise people who are walking for weight loss to walk as long a duration each day as they can. And she was working a full-time job like most people who are trying to stay in shape. So she committed to walking 2 miles a day, which she could find time for. And then on the weekends, she walked between 5 and 7 miles each day. And the story is really kind of moving because when she started exercising at that high weight, she wondered where she could exercise and not have people, you know, looking at her like, what is that woman doing exercising? Like people who are dealing with obesity shouldn't be out exercising or something.
Yeah.
But they do face a lot of eyes that make them feel uncomfortable. So she actually came up with a strategy of going to the cemetery to do her walks. And if that wasn't sort of a great story by itself, her parents had bought a headstone with her name inscribed and her birth date inscribed. So each time she walked a circle around the cemetery, she was motivated by that. And in about 18 months, she had walked off over 200 pounds. And that's when I heard from her. She wrote me a letter and told me that she'd just done a ceremony in the cemetery and symbolically buried the 200 plus pounds that she'd lost in the grave and walked out of the cemetery saying she was going to start her new life at a much more healthy weight. And it's a great story. And
That's awesome.
It proves that just about anybody, you know, one would think at 450 pounds, and she was about 5'7", that, most people are getting gastric bypasses when they're like maybe 100 pounds overweight or even less than 100 pounds overweight because they don't think there is any option. And basically, anybody who's willing to move their body and do it on a regular basis can succeed. If Anne Marie did, and it's a very inspiring story. She was written up in a couple national magazines for that accomplishment, and a lot of people sought her out trying to get inspiration from her, and she's not a very public person, so she's kind of backed into the shadows, and she just wants to go on with her healthy life, but it is truly an inspirational story.
Well, and the thing that a lot of people don't realize, too, about a gastric bypass is that that's the kind of thing that you have if you tend to overeat. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to work for somebody that has the opposite problem, which is a metabolic problem where they don't eat frequently enough, you
right.
know, and their body is really efficient and goes into starvation mode at the drop of a hat. So gastric bypass isn't going to help those people. It's only going to help the ones who tend to overeat, because then it makes the area where the food goes much, much smaller, so you feel full quickly. So that's another thing that a lot of people don't know about. They think gastric bypass is like the be-all, end-all and the magic, and it's not. And there's a lot of risks with doing something like that, whereas if you can do something, you know, in a natural, healthy way, the way that your body would normally do it, then you're ahead of the game. You know,
right.
the body cooperates with you. You're not screwing up, you know, all the different things that that could get screwed up with this kind of stuff.
Right. Well, and the other thing that happens when you start to use your body to exercise, I mean, the book that I was working on when I met you is called the No Pain Total Body Exercise Solution, and it's not just about what happens with the body either. One of the things over the years I've been trying to sort of unravel the mysteries of why such a simple exercise can be so profound and change so many people's lives, not just about weight loss, but about dealing with diabetes, dealing with depression, all kinds of challenges that people have. And I've known, and people have known for years, that exercise is good treatment for depression. They did some of the earliest studies mm-hmm. back in the 70s, I think, in Norway, where people who were suffering from depression were offered either the new medications back then or a program of exercise, and it turned out that the exercise was nearly as effective as the medication, and obviously there's only positive side effects to exercise and none of the negative side effects that come along with many of the medications. And in the last year, I read a book by Dr. John Rady. He's a brain scientist from Harvard, and he's actually been studying the effects of exercise in the brain for nearly as long as I've been promoting this kind of exercise. And he basically says that exercise is the number one thing you can do for your brain health. And we did a study in about 1992 at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, looking at the effects of exerciding on a psychological profile. They used a profile of mood states that measured the level of anxiety and depression and anger, and I think there were 7 mood states. And they had a control group who continued not to exercise. They had a group who started exerciding, and they had a group who walked. And the walkers had a little bit more improvement than the control group, but the people who exercised had significant improvements in the profile of mood states and in their body image scale evaluation. And back then, everybody thought that anything that had to do with mood was just about endorphins, but Dr. Rady says that most endorphins are produced in the body and they don't cross the blood-brain barrier. But what does happen is the body, according to Dr. Rady and others, actually produces, when you exercise, actually has the capacity to produce just about a natural, an endogenous version of almost every chemical pharmaceutical solution that's out on the market. We actually produce endocannabinoids, which are the same mm-hmm. acting
same thing as marijuana.
Same thing as marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no limit to what the brain can produce with exercise. It produces anti-inflammatories, antidepressants, and in fact, he says it produces basically an endogenous form of every pharmaceutical medication there is out there, and it produces it in the right dose and sends it to the right receptor with no negative side effects. So
yeah,
I've come to conclude.
Thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So
when you're talking about people that are overweight, one of the problems is that as they lose the fat, you know, the fat contains most of the toxins.
Right.
And this is one of the problems that, and I've suffered this myself many times, where I get into my exercise program, and I'm one of those, you know, fanatic exercisers when I do it. And so I'll be doing it for hours, and I'll do like 45 minutes on the treadmill twice a day, and you know, I'll do swimming and sauna and just, you know, all the weights and everything else. And I hit about a month and a half, and I get sick. And I get really sick, and it's because the fat has melted to the point where it's letting the toxins out. So when you have something that is going to be gentle, so you're not stressing your body and creating more toxins, which happens,
right.
You know, if you, for instance, if you rip your muscles, you know, when you're weightlifting, or if you are exercising them beyond the point of what would be considered normal, you're producing lactic acid. And at that point, you know, there's all kinds of other stuff that can happen. And so you're dealing with not only the chemical processes of exercise on the body, but also the release of all kinds of toxins, Lord only knows what, from the fat cells as they're dissolving.
Right. Well, that's another reason that the movement of all the muscles in the body, the contraction of all the muscles throughout the body, really sort of supercharging your lymph system to remove those toxins is really important too. The other thing that a lot of people are not aware of is, you know, we live in a culture where if something's good, more of it's better. Mm-hmm. And that's really been sort of the assumption by most people when it comes to exercise. If I'm not getting the kind of results I want to get, I need to exercise harder, longer. And it's not necessarily true. I mean, our genetics basically are not much changed from the days when we were hunter-gatherers and we basically walked about 12 miles a day, either in search of game or in search of things to gather and eat. And now we're at a point where we don't have all that much need to move. And the saber-toothed tigers are all gone. You know, when I see somebody running, I like to think of that they're still fleeing the saber-toothed tiger. Basically, when you do that, your body doesn't know whether or not you're fleeing a saber-toothed tiger or training. And the response is that you get these stress chemicals that are released, cortisol and other stress chemicals that really are not beneficial to health. So if you just move your body at sort of a nice gentle nature that uses all the body's major muscles and gets oxygen flowing throughout your body. I mean, if you look at what I do, it's sort of a hybrid between Western exercise and Eastern exercises like yoga and Tai Chi. I took yoga for runners back in the days when I was still competitively running, and I thought, well, you know, this really isn't exercise. But anyone who's ever taken yoga finds out that it definitely is exercise. And when I took Tai Chi, it was the same thing. It was such slow, controlled movements. I thought, you know, this is interesting, but it really, it's not going to do much to get me in shape. Well, what I found is when I was doing the slow, controlled movements, I could feel my body heating up. You know, it has more in common with those exercises where it's about slow, controlled, mindful moving. And both yoga and Tai Chi and other Eastern exercise forms stress deep, rhythmic, controlled breathing. And the nice thing about walking with the poles is it results in deep, rhythmic breathing, but it doesn't require all that much consciousness, which is some who practice yoga and stuff might say that that's not such a good thing. You need to be conscious, but I think the essence is that we breathe deeply and rhythmically, and both mindful breathing and exercising your entire body in a way that calls for a lot of oxygen to be taken in and distributed throughout your body will result in that kind of deep rhythmic breathing.
Well, yeah, and you need the deep breathing because you need to clear out all the stale air from the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And so doing that in a controlled manner is going to help anyway. I've had people that I've watched them heal up lesions, you know, down to the bone. And I've taught them just a simple deep breathing technique. And, you know, suddenly they've been healed up where it might have taken, you know, a month and a half, 2 months without healing. And then all of a sudden, with getting the oxygen moving the way it was supposed to, even just by deep breathing, I'm talking about people that couldn't get off their butts, you know, they were on nursing services. And just that breathing was enough to heal them up when everything else had not worked. So that is a really, really important thing. And I noticed, like, when I was doing the sample walking with the poles, the breathing naturally goes by itself to kind of a really easy kind of a deep breathing that's not stressed. You know, it's like you're just walking along and you're enjoying yourself and you're feeling good. And you know, for me, it's really easy to evaluate because I remember what it feels like to be athletic. And even though I don't feel that way all the time, when I get into that rhythm, I can feel the difference in my body and I can recognize that that's good because it makes me feel that way when I'm not in shape, you know.
So yeah. Well, actually,
kind of advantage there, you know.
You know, you said you remembered what it was like to be athletic. I'm doing a lot of work now with retirement communities and retirement age people, and one of the pilot projects that we did out in California was actually to get a group of people who are using canes and walkers and have them trade in their canes and walkers for a pair of walking poles. And Peggy Buchanan, who ran the programs out in Santa Barbara, said that people who traded in their walkers, the first thing that happened was they became much more upright. And instead of doing the walker shuffle, they resumed the more normal gait pattern. But she said the most remarkable thing was that the change in the way their attitude, the change in the attitude that came about when they walked with the poles versus the canes and the walkers. She said they went from having the attitude and the demeanor of an invalid to having that of an athlete. So I mean, we when we're children, we use our bodies all the time, and we don't call it exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But when what we've done is we've really gotten to a point in our history where we don't have to use our body, we don't have to move our body if we don't want to. It's pretty much all elective. And what we've done for the last 40 years since Dr. Cooper wrote the book Aerobics was believe that we had to get into a target heart rate, and we had to do it what I believe is to excess in order to stay well. And before there was the modern exercise movement, there were people who stayed well because they walked for hours a day. Their work involved using their body. There really is no need to sweat profusely. And the Easterners have proven that to us. I mean, the Western world took such a long time to accept yoga and tai chi as being legitimate exercise forms. And there are a lot of people who consider themselves exercise experts who still don't think much of those types of exercise. But if you go to China and Taiwan and Korea, you'll see people in the squares of the cities, hundreds of them doing this slow movement exercise. And of the hundreds, a high percentage of them are in their 70s and 80s, and some even in their 90s. So
that's interesting, too, with Tai Chi and Qigong, is you can work up a sweat just doing these very slow movements
right.
that don't seem like they're taking that much effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more like you're getting things into place. But, I mean, I have done this. I did Tai Chi for 3 hours in a row one day. and I actually knocked mold out of my body. That was interesting.
I believe it.
I had no idea, but I mean, you know, what was really funny was I didn't feel like I was stressed, but I could feel the energy moving through my body, and I had a ring of sweat that went from my neck all the way down to my waist. And when I went to change my clothes, I went, oh, my God, I had no idea I was sweating that much.
Right.
But one of the problems, and I had discussed this with you before about the poles, is that I was unable to do Tai Chi the way that I should have because of my knee injuries.
Right.
And, you know, it involves a lot of twisting and a lot of stress on the joints and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, you can do it sitting down, but it's not the same thing. So what I was looking for was something that would allow me to get back into some kind of physical shape without it being too stressful and without it stressing my joints more. And I found with those poles, didn't bother me a bit.
Yeah. Well, I did a presentation on exostriding at the Cooper Clinic in Dallas, Texas in 1997, and at the same time I was there, one of the leading biomechanics experts in the country was there, and I showed him what I was doing, and basically he said, what you're doing is promoting the use of all the muscles and all the joints through the ranges of motion and the way the muscles were designed to contract. That's, you know, perfectly healthy motion. There's nothing that's going to put stress on the body. And so we've got, like I say, we've got programs going from elementary school up into retirement communities. I have worked with athletes. There are some techniques that you can use to make it more intense athletic kind of training. But what I really want to do through my work is activate those people who have been, by and large, turned off to exercise by the concept that if there's no pain, there's no gain. And there really is a no-pain, total-body exercise solution. My exostriding is one, but Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, Pilates is a great way to use your entire body. The thing that I like about my exercise and the reason it works so well for so many people is that you're not going to need a master trainer. I think in your about 10 minutes of instruction, you got the basics. And most people in about 30 minutes can learn all that they need to know. And then it's just a matter of going out and putting one foot and one arm with a pole in front of another for as long as you want. And basically it's not about speed, it's about using the body with some intensity. And the body was designed to walk, and the core was designed to provide the stability for all motion, and when you use the poles you really activate the core. So it's
well,
just
didn't you tell me that you were an architect and that's how you designed these things?
Yeah, I am. I was trained as an architect. I got out of the field of architecture a long time ago, partly because it was such a sedentary field. But I've designed the poles, basically every component of the poles to make them as ergonomic and as highly functioning as they can be. The vibration dampening characteristics of any pole are very important, so mine will dampen the vibration very nicely. I've got a really nice ergonomic grip on them. A little tip that looks like it. I just designed it to look like a little boot, but it was a form follows function process with that too. It just ended up looking like a foot because it basically is the foot for your second set of legs.
Yeah, and I love those little booties. They're so cute. You know, when I first saw those poles, I went, are those little boots on the end of the poles?
Yeah. Well, for those people, yeah, unfortunately, when I do my workshops and when I showed you, I had the poles to show people. If people want to take a look at what we're talking about, they can go to walkingpoles.com. It's the easiest way to remember it. It's also exostrider.com, but it's a lot easier to remember walkingpoles.com. You can take a look at the poles there and learn more about the exercise and get a lot more information. So I hope that people will, if they're interested, go to walkingpoles.com, and if they see somebody on the street with a pair of poles, ask them what their experience is. People love it. That's what it says on my website, and it wasn't an advertising line I came up with. I mean, basically, as much as most people dislike exercise, when they start using their whole body in a gentle way that uses all the body's muscles, it's very motivating. It produces lots of positive brain chemicals, and it's a very positive addiction to something that's very safe.
Yeah, and that's what I so appreciate about what you've created, Tom. I mean, I was so impressed, and you know, just had to think about it for a while about, you know, what everything is that could happen with these poles as far as the benefits. And I have to say I'm really impressed, and I love that you kept the price down so they're very reasonable. And, you know, I know there's a lot of people out there in the audience that could really use something like this, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, seeing how I do with them. Because, like
yeah, I definitely want to hear back from you.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what's been the most rewarding part of the work that I've done for the last 20 years is hearing from people whose lives have been changed in really remarkable ways. I'm hoping you're one of the next ones to report to me that you get that kind of sort of life-altering experience from it. And I think anybody who isn't exercising regularly and they're not doing it because they're not motivated to exercise, this is definitely something that they should try, because, like I say, if you enjoy walking and you'd enjoy it even more if you got motivating results and started to look, feel, and function better, this is the fastest track for that.
And then, too, with the poles, you know, with the little boots on them and stuff, the poles actually stabilize you. So,
absolutely.
You know, if you've had a back injury or knee injuries or something like else, that it's difficult, unless you're having a really good day, it's difficult to walk even, because you tend to stumble, the feet don't work right, you know, and so it's just kind of, it's a kind of a cautionary thing that you don't, you know, really extend yourself the way that you could, because there's always that thing in the back of your mind that you're going to trip and go, you know, butt over tea kettle and be injured again. And I find, like with the poles, what I noticed was that it gave me a really neat sense of confidence, because those little rubber tips at the end really helped, you know, gave you an extra stabilization. And then when you showed me the little exercise of grabbing the poles and just bending your knees down a little bit, like you were on the trampoline, but without bouncing, you know, that's something pretty much anybody can do. If you can stand and hang on to a couple of poles, you can do that.
Yeah, it's about as simple a tool as you can get, but it's pretty remarkable what I've learned from it and the kind of results that I've seen and people achieve. And actually, I'm very happy with the way that it's kept me feeling and functioning at my age. I'm very happy with it.
That's pretty cool. Boy, we're about out of time here. Before you go, do you have any discounts available for radio show listeners?
should have asked me that one earlier. I don't have anything right up, but let's see. What's your show called?
The Enlightened Medicine Show.
EMS, Enlightened Medical Show. I'll tell you what, I'll go into the office tomorrow and I'll put up a discount when you go through the process of ordering, if you decide you want to give it a try. And everybody who tries my poles has 60 days to try them. If they're not 100% happy, they can return them. If you enter EMS 2009, I'll give you a 10% discount.
All right, thanks.
So,
hey,
that
all
down.
Helps. So thank you very much for that.
All right, Dr. Val, it's nice talking with you. Enjoyed meeting you, and I'm even more going to enjoy hearing from you in the future about how things go with your experience with the poles.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tom. And let me know when your book is ready to sell.
All right, I sure will do that.
Yeah, and then what we'll do is we'll have you on again to let people know about what's in the book, and then you know, you can promote that. So let me just give your website again. It's www.walkingpoles.com. That's walkingpoles.com or exerstrider.com. That's exerstrider.com. We've been talking with Tom Rutland, the inventor and manufacturer of Exerstrider poles, and there are four different types. They are very reasonable, so please do check out his website and give him a try. I've been pretty impressed with them. And you can also contact Tom through his website if you have any questions for him. So I presume that, you know, they can give you a call if they if they're not sure if it's going to do what they need for their particular condition. But you've been at this a long time, so I bet you could tell them, Tom.
Well, I spend a lot of time talking to people about their particular situation, and I'll be straightforward with people. If they want to give me a call, I'll let them know what they can and what they might not be able to do. But basically, no matter what's ailing you, if you can find a way to move, it's going to help. And
this is
a great tool for people who have some challenges moving.
Absolutely. Well, our time is up, so thank you so much for being on the show, Tom. Look forward to talking with you again.
I enjoyed it. Thanks for the invitation. I'll look forward to hearing from you again.
Absolutely. All right. Take care. And we've been talking with Tom Rutland, and also our show has been brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, Hydramay Skin Nutrition. That's www.hydramay.com, HYDRAME.com, all natural, organic skin nutrition. Your skin just soaks it up, so it's more than a lotion. They also have several products, lip balm and shaving supplies for men and things like that, body wash, all kinds of cool stuff. So please do check them out. And, as always, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.
And awaken, oh.